We're live and we're local. This is a Juno afternoon on Wednesday, April 18th, 2018. I'm your host, Shelley Delaney. On today's show, we'll get a preview of NAMI's fundraiser comedy for her cause. Daughters of the New Moon will highlight their workshop and performance this weekend. Nikki Love will outline the 10th annual Early Learning Fair, and we'll get the details on this year's Empty Bowls fundraiser. Those interviews, plus national Native news, bird note, music, and more, coming up right here on a Juno afternoon. Taking a look at weather for the rest of today, rain with highs in the mid-40s and east winds to 20 miles per hour. Tonight, more of the same. Rain with lows around 40, winds to 20 miles per hour. Tomorrow, more rain, winds to 30 miles per hour. National Native News is next.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Opioid abuse has hit Native American communities across the country hard. Tribes are striking back in court. As Wyoming Public Radio's Melody Edwards reports, the Northern Arapaho tribe is among those to file lawsuits against drug makers and distributors.
Sault Ste. Marie member Stacy Bolin of the Chippewa tribe is the director of the National Indian Health Board. She says Indian Health Services is only funded at 50% of its need and only 30% of its staffing needs. That means people must wait long periods for care, often given opioids to help manage pain in the meantime.
They may be given something to mitigate the pain. And because of the lack of appropriate health care in Indian country, can lead to longer-term use of opioids to fill the time until that person can actually receive the health care that they need.
Bolin says that leads to high rates of addiction, and she says tribes are paying a high cost for opioid abuse.
The cost to the tribes of policing, the judicial systems, the health care systems, the crisis intervention, it's just so exorbitant, and it's, in many cases, it's crushing the tribe.
It's this high cost that led the Northern Arapaho tribe in Wyoming to recently file a lawsuit against opioid manufacturers and distributors. In the tribe's complaint, they said, quote, every member has been affected, and encouraged other tribes to join the effort. Many have, including tribes in Wisconsin, Minnesota, and the Dakotas. Bolin says last month, the National Indian Health Board went before U.S. lawmakers to request direct funding instead of competitive grants for their health services to help fight the opioid crisis on reservations. Congress agreed, appropriating $50 million through their latest spending bill to help tribes combat the problem. For National Native News, I'm Melody Edwards in Laramie.
A case involving tribal fishing rights is before the U.S. Supreme Court. Washington tribes say the state needs to fix pipes, which may harm salmon runs. Eric Tigetoff has more.
At the center of Washington versus United States are culverts, the pipes that carry streams under roads. The state has more than 800 culverts blocking more than 1,000 miles of streams. 21 tribes sued the state 17 years ago to fix these culverts that make salmon migration more difficult. Professor Robert Anderson specializes in Native American law at the University of Washington Law School. He says the lawsuit is based on a series of treaties that opened up the state to settlement.
In exchange for surrendering their claims to most of their land, in western Washington, the tribes retained an explicit right to fish at usual and accustomed stations in their aboriginal territories.
The state says it will cost $2 billion to fix the culverts, although Anderson counters there's no evidence for that number, and it most likely represents the worst-case scenario. Washington Attorney General Bob Ferguson acknowledges the state needs to do more to protect salmon, but says this case could force a costly solution that might not work. Anderson says the state argued in a lower court that treaties don't offer protections for fish habitat, meaning tribe members have a right to fish, but the state doesn't have to guarantee there are any fish to catch. Washington has backed away from that argument in the Supreme Court case. The verdict could have implications for other tribes and for the habitat protections in treaties, although Anderson says these salmon-blocking culverts set a high bar.
One thing I can say about this case is that the harm is so clear that's being caused by these culverts that it's difficult to see how another case could match this level of hardship that the culverts are causing.
Still, he says tribes in the West and Midwest are watching the case closely because of its potential effects on their treaty rights to fish and hunt. I'm Eric Tegedoff.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios by Kwanic Broadcast Corporation. funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, with support from the Public Radio Satellite Service.
Support by the 35th Gathering of Nations Powwow. An enchanting evening is yours at the Miss Indian World Traditional Presentations Thursday, April 26th in the Kiva Auditorium, Albuquerque Convention Center. Tickets available online and at the door. Support by BNSF Railway, moving our economy for over 165 years. Our vision is to operate injury and accident-free with safety programs, training, and technology. More at bnsf.com/tribal relations.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
You're listening to A Juno Afternoon. I'm your Wednesday host, Shelley Delaney, and my first guests are here to tell us all about Comedy for a Cause. Welcome to the show, Crystal and Michael. Thanks for having us.
Nice to be here.
You're welcome. Now, Comedy for a Cause is a benefit for NAMI. What is NAMI? And tell me a little bit about your roles there.
Sure. So NAMI is the National Alliance on Mental Illness, and we're the largest grassroots mental health organization in the country. And there's affiliates like ours all over the country. Locally here in Juneau, we're providing mental illness education and support groups, both to individuals who are living with mental illness as well as family members, caregivers.
And what do you do there?
And I am staff to the organization.
Actually, Crystal's more than just staff. She is our executive director. My name is Michael Lukchen. I am a volunteer and board member for NAMI Juneau.
And how much of a need is there here in Juneau for those types of resources?
Well, so with NAMI organizations, we're providing what we call peer support. And so we train volunteers and individuals who have lived experience either with mental illness or having someone in their family or a loved one living with mental illness. And we find that peer support is really complementary to professional services. And we also help people just navigate the various services. It's not as straightforward of a path as it might be with other chronic conditions and diseases. And so we're really here to be a resource, to provide current information, but also just to provide kind of a community of support for individuals.
And as Crystal said, NAMI is really focused on the grassroots side of it. So we started from an education perspective, and there's a heavy emphasis in programs of trying to educate family members, loved ones about mental health issues, both within them, their families, with folks that are afflicted with mental health issues, and how to get them services and help them navigate the way through the various providers, the various clinicians, the various legal or hospital-type assistances that they may need locally.
And is this local affiliate here in Juneau, is it a fairly large organization?
We're a pretty small organization, so right now I'm the only staff, but we're really blessed because we're volunteer-driven. So I had mentioned, you know, we train volunteers who, again, have, experienced mental illness or have in their family who really lead our programs, train to lead our programs. So we're largely volunteer-driven. We have a lot of amazing people who contribute a lot of time and dedication and also their heart to this organization, so...
This is such a great place for volunteer support. I don't know what we'd do without all these volunteers that support everything from NAMI to public radio.
Absolutely.
Correct.
As a volunteer, Michael, what's your experience been like, and how long have you been volunteering for NAMI?
I've been volunteering for about 4 years, I think. Mental health is just an issue that's affected myself and some of my loved ones, and so I saw a need and I saw an opportunity to participate, and NAMI was very helpful for the interests that I was willing to participate in. And I guess I got asked to serve on one term as a board member for like a 2-year stint. And I think now I'm into my next third year I finished, and then I'm just keep on staying. I'll probably be a long time volunteer for NAMI because I believe very strongly that mental health issues are underrepresented and misunderstood within the community. If most people don't know, is that 1 in 5 people suffer from mental health issues. And so it's a huge issue. That's an issue that unfortunately many times is swept under the carpet, not discussed. I like what NAMI's focus area is of bringing it into the light, getting resources to people that need mental health issues, and trying to help those folks that are sometimes the least served or many times misunderstood because they can't deal with their own mental health issues themselves without assistance. from loved ones.
Do you feel as if we, as a society, are moving past that stigma, bringing it more out into the open, out into the light? Are things progressing there?
I think there's still a long way to go. I mean, yes, I do think there's a lot more people willing to talk about it. We see a lot of celebrities and people coming forward with their challenges, and that's really hopeful and I think helpful. But I also think if we focus more on research and treatments and how do we really help people through these times, that will help also reduce the stigma. So, yeah.
Right. And I would just say that it's a healthy conversation to have. And, you know, just an idea of really the theme of our fundraiser on Friday is about comedy. Let's talk about comedy and let's not talk about affliction. Let's bring some joy and some hopefulness and happiness in those that are afflicted or affected by mental health issues.
That's a great segue into my next question, which was about the Comedy for a Cause and what motivates NAMI to sponsor a night of humor and storytelling for their annual fundraiser.
I think partly we just fell into it, and we just really loved the idea. There's so many talented people in Juneau. There's so many great storytellers, and there also happens to be some really good humorists in our community. And so, you know, just being able to bring those people together on stage, you know, a few people that are on the lineup have been a part of our organization, and we have a great curator, Tom Cosgrove, who's a part of Mudrooms, who really helps us bring in the right folks and make a fun night of it. So we've been doing this kind of format of Comedy Cause for about 3 years now.
Are either of you performing at the event?
Absolutely not.
I'm not going to get me up there.
See, I'm funny too. No, tell us a little bit more about Comedy for a Cause. Who is performing?
Yeah, so well, it's coming up this Friday, April 20th, and doors open at 6:30. We're going to have a silent auction. People can come in and grab some beer or wine, no host beer and wine. And the event starts at 7. We have 7 performers, Tom Cosgrove, Roblin Gray Davis, Liz Eilers, we have Sarah Hannon, Andy Miller, Phoebe and Paula Rohrbacher, and our MC Adam Berkey. So
great lineup.
Absolutely.
And what are the storytellers going to be talking about?
Well, that's kind of a mystery. So I think it's actually quite various. There, some of them are pulling stories, and then others are going to do more stand-up comedy. So I think it's going to have quite a bit of variety, and a piano is involved in one of them. So I think it's just going to be a whole mix.
That's a good teaser. And apart from funny storytellers doing their thing, what else can we expect to find at the event?
Yeah, so we'll have a silent auction, as I mentioned, and all those proceeds, again, going to NAMI Juneau. Pucker Wilsons will be out back serving up food as they would, and they are going to donate some of those proceeds back to NAMI Juneau, which is amazing. Alaskan Brewery has also donated some beer, and so that contribution will go back to NAMI Juneau. That's about it in terms of what's going on there. Oh, and a popcorn bar with all the fixins.
Wow, cool. I'm excited, but that got me.
The popcorn got you.
No, a popcorn and much, much more. And all proceeds benefit NAMI. What program specifically does it support?
Yeah, so it just supports all of our education programs and support groups. We hold different programs throughout the year, and we also have ongoing support groups that are running year-round, and those are all free to participants in our community. So fundraisers like this, along with our grant through the Alaska Mental Health Trust Authority, allow us to offer those programs free of charge to people.
Right. It's all money that's being returned back to the community, so we really appreciate the high attendance and all the, you know, the love from the community to make NAMI fun for Comedy for a Cause event a success like it has been for the last several years.
Mm-hmm. Comedy for a great cause. And if we can't attend Comedy for a Cause, are there other ways we can support NAMI?
Yeah, our website's a great place to go and to learn more about our organization and the programs and services we run in the community, as well as ways that you can look at how to become a member or donate. So namijuneau.org would be a great place to go.
Right. And we also have a Facebook page, and there's a great way to get information. You can look on the JAC for other events that we may host. And we have many, many flyers in the community when we're doing these educational events that, again, as I'll emphasize, are free. And we're just trying to be another resource to support Juneau's mental health community.
Comedy for a Cause, a night of local humor and storytelling, is this Friday, April 20th. It will be at the Jack. It starts at 7 o'clock, and tickets are available at Jack and Hearthside Books. Is there anything I missed?
I just want to thank three of our sponsors, Rainforest Pediatric Care, Search, and Douglas Weaver for giving generously so that this event could be possible.
And I would also mention Family Medical Practice.
Yes, thank you.
Great. Crystal, Michael, thank you both for being here today, and thank you for doing what you do.
Thanks for having us, Shelley.
Glad to be here. Thanks.
Support comes from Northland Audiology and Hearing Services in the Jordan Creek Center. Northland Audiology offers diagnostic medical hearing expertise and digital technology hearing instruments. NorthlandAudiology.com or 789-6780.
Youth have a target on their back. Tobacco companies have a history of marketing flavored tobacco products to attract kids. In recent years, there has been an explosion of sweet flavored tobacco products, like e-cigarettes and cigars, with flavors like gummy bears and cotton candy. Youth use may lead to nicotine addiction. Flavors can create the impression that a product is less harmful. Encourage youth to stand up to the tobacco industry by not buying into their deception. This message is brought to you by the Partnership for Tobacco-Free Southeast and Search.
Thank you.
You're tuned into a Juno Afternoon. It's about 20 minutes after the hour. And here with me in the studio are some representatives of Daughters of the New Moon Dance Troupe, hence the music. Welcome to the show, Rosa and Maddie.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Thanks so much for having us.
All right. So would you like to introduce yourselves with your full names and your roles in Daughters of the New Moon?
My name is Maddie Grimes, and I am a dancer with our local belly dance troupe, the Daughters of the New Moon, and I have the pleasure of having our guest artist with us today.
My name is Rosa Noreen, and I am visiting Juno from Maine, and I'm here to teach some belly dance workshops and be hosted by these wonderful women.
Awesome. Well, we're going to talk all about it. First, let's bring this music back up. Can you tell me what we're listening to here and how you might incorporate this in one of your performances?
This is a classic vintage album called A Gift from Cairo. And this music is Egyptian belly dance music made for joyous performances, celebrating anything from weddings to birthdays to baby naming celebrations to just general entertainment and fun.
Cool, cool. Thank you for letting us use that as your intro. All right, Daughters of the New Moon. Can you tell me what that name means, please, or why you selected it?
You know, I actually, this troupe was formed in the 1980s by a woman named Kathleen Gamble. And so they came up with this this name, I think, just as an homage of this dance often being kind of correlated with a lot of different women's celebrations and women's times. So and the new moon is often really kind of strongly correlated with feminine energy. So
I really like it. All right. And how many dancers are a part of the troupe?
It kind of ebbs and flows. Really, currently we have between 6 and 10 that are actively performing with us, but we'll have 6 this weekend for our show.
Great. And are there other performers or musicians that are going to be with you?
This week we just have Rosa with us, so yeah, she'll be our extra performer.
Just Rosa. I think she's more than enough. All right. And how you said it's belly dancing. Could you give us a little bit more detail about the style of dance? What do you know about the history of belly dancing? Or are there different types of belly dancing within belly dancing?
Those are perfect questions. To the last question, yes. So belly dance comes from the Middle East, and the Middle East is a very diverse area. And we pull movements from or different styles from different areas. So Egyptian belly dance is different from Turkish, is different from Lebanese, is different from what you'll find across North Africa. There's a recognizable movement vocabulary that ties them all together. But from each country, there's different emphasis and different traditions and a lot to learn.
Very interesting. And how long have you been doing this?
I've been dancing since 2004 for belly dance, and I got I found a class. I saw through a window some women dancing and having fun right after college, and I wanted to be part of that group. They looked like they were having so much fun together, and so I eventually found a class and became obsessed, and here I am in Alaska.
That's quite the journey. How about you, Maddie? How long have you been dancing with Daughters of the New Moon, dancing in general?
Right. I have a very varied dance history, but really after I graduated high school and was in school for midwifery, I was looking for something that was a little bit more fun. Like Rosa said, belly dance is just a really joyous dance. And so I joined our troupe back in 2012, I think. So the last 6 years. Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. Wow. You're a real trooper. No pun intended. Now you guys are here to talk about a workshop that's coming up. Could you say more about it? When and where is it happening, and what all will you be teaching?
That is correct. So we'll have a workshop coming up this weekend. We actually will have our first night tomorrow with Miss Rosa, and then moving on, we'll actually have a performance here at the K360 studio on Friday evening, and then have two workshops on Saturday and Sunday. So, and Rosa's got a really kind of great style of teaching where it's super accessible for lots of different levels of dancers, which is part of why we've chosen to bring her up this year. And we'll be really focusing on lots of technique and body movement, so how to make your presence beautiful and you're dancing. So it's not just belly dance. It's going to be really applicable to all kinds of different styles of dancers this weekend.
I glanced at the list of sessions. There was things like arm movements and a number of like a wide variety of things. I was wondering if you could describe a basic technique or dance move for us, sort of paint a visual picture.
Ooh. You can stand up if you need to.
Verbally. Hmm. So some of the very popular movements in belly dance that you find across all different styles are figure eights of the hips. And sometimes those figure eights move horizontally, so you're twisting your hips. And sometimes they move vertically, so you're lifting and dropping your hips and pulling them in. So it's a lot of core movement, undulations, body waves. And then additionally, there's arms. The arms can do all kinds of talking on their own and some beautiful hand movements that really represent different instruments that are playing and different ways to connect to those feelings that you have inside that you want to express.
Good description. All right. So this is an annual event. How many have there been so far?
You know, there have been so many. I mean, since I've joined the workshop or joined the troop, excuse me, in 2012, we've had a workshop every year. And really, my understanding is that it's been continuing on since, you know, the late 90s and early 2000s where we've tried to bring guests artists in. So this is something that we do every April. So if this weekend doesn't work, keep an eye out for future years.
Do you feel that interest in Juno has grown over time?
I think it has. I think it kind of, you know, ebbs and flows a little bit with just phases of life and the reality of like our troop will kind of grow and then people have babies and need to take some time off to do parenthood and then they'll join back with us. But Juneau is definitely a very multicultural city and very interested in art, as you know, we've got here with the radio station as well. So we have a lot of really great interest in our community.
What will the costumes be like at the performance on Friday?
We'll have all kinds of fun costumes. So we are going to do our first super coordinated troop costume. So if you come, you're going to see us. We're going to be matching costumes, which is great. Lots of sparkle, lots of bling, lots of jewel tones. And then some of our dancers will be wearing more traditional coin bra and belt sets, whereas others will be wearing more kind of full-length dance costumes or dress style costumes as well. Lots of sparkle.
Is there any symbolism or meaning to the jingle jangle coin belts and things like that that accompany the costumes and the dance moves?
There is a long tradition of the coins. I can speak more to Egypt than to any other style because that's what I've studied. That's where I've traveled. The coins. Sorry, stumbling over my words here.
No, it's all right. It's all good.
There's a popular tradition throughout Egypt where women wear these necklaces which have coins of different styles and value attached to them. And in many villages, that's a woman's dowry. Or not her dowry, sorry. That's more like that's her possession. That necklace and everything on it belongs to her. And so if she's at a celebration, she might wear it out as a decoration to, you know, participate in the celebratory atmosphere. But just on a daily basis, she'll wear it underneath her clothing. And so that's one aspect of that tradition. Additionally, the coins make this wonderful sound when they jingle together.
Yeah.
So when you have a whole bunch of them together and you do these hip movements that I was describing, you get a really lovely sound. And that sound has been used over time in many different communities to sort of be a symbol of dancing. Here are dancing women, and now we can hear them and pay attention. So it comes from a few different angles.
Nice. And we talked a little bit about the music. What other sorts of music do you guys like to work with, and what can we expect to hear at the performance?
We have a really varied set this year, so we've got some very traditional music, kind of like what we heard from Rose's Gift of Cairo. We have some more contemporary Turkish pop that we'll be dancing to.
Cool.
Yeah, so that'll be great. And we've got a lot of really great kind of Egyptian instrumental pieces as well, so it'll be a good kind of snapshot of many different cultures.
Nice.
And what do you each get out of this personally? Why do you love belly dancing? Why do you do it?
I can start. I guess I have a pretty significant tie to the childbearing piece of belly dance, with that being kind of part of my profession, where this is often a dance, or these movements are movements that are done during the childbirth process to help get babies in a good position and help labor progress normally and naturally. And so having that tie for me in something that's not work but is fun is really rewarding. And also just having a great supportive group of women is excellent. Yeah,
yeah, having that community is really, really special when you have this dance that you share with other people who are around you in close connection. That's really special. For me, I started taking belly dance classes after college. But when I was a child and a teenager, I was really serious about ballet. And I loved it, and I was going to go away to school and get really serious about it, and then I got injured, and I had to quit. So that also coincided with a time where, my body was changing. I was 16, and things were changing. And it wasn't always that well received by some teachers. Not all teachers by any means, but some teachers in my ballet school had a negative take on those changes. And something that I really love about belly dance is that it really lets us go through all these different stages of life. In Egypt, this is a social dance. It's just the way people dance at home for fun, at parties with their friends, just to pass the time. Little kids do it, adults do it, men and women do it. And so it's not meant for just, you know, one person who looks a certain way, but it's meant for everyone to share.
The performance is this Friday. Where can we find out more information about the workshops, performance, and Daughters of the New Moon?
Yeah, so the best way to find us, we do have a Facebook page under Daughters of the New Moon, and then we also have a very active website. So if you go to www.daughtersofthenewmoon.com, you'll find all of the information about our upcoming workshop and show.
And the show is, I said it's this Friday, but what time is it again?
It's going to be at 7.
Okay, great. Right here at 360 North Studios. Fantastic. So Rosa and Maddie, thanks for being here today and answering all my questions. Is there anything else you'd like to add?
Well, this was such a pleasure. Thank you, Shelley.
Of course. Thanks for being here.
Tickets are on sale now for the 2018 Juno Jazz and Classics Festival with events you know and love, including Strings at the Shrine, Putting on the Ritz, and this year, Jazz and Classics has added a classical brunch cruise. Tickets are available at the Jack, Hearthside Books, and online at jazzandclassics.org. This message brought to you by Juno Jazz and Classics.
Support comes from Alaska Litho, dedicated to delivering personal customer service to Southeast Alaska businesses for 70 years. Alaska Litho uses innovative technology to support businesses. More information about their print, social media, and website services at aklitho.com.
This is Bird Note. In the Canadian North, where Alberta meets the Northwest Territories, lies the huge Wood Buffalo National Park. Here, the Peace and Athabasca rivers run through fescue grasslands, boreal forests, and wetlands of international significance. Here, one of the world's most endangered birds, the whooping crane, comes to dance, nest, and raise its young. Visitors can see pristine ecosystems, 5,000 bison, 150-pound wolves, the largest freshwater delta in North America, and fire and ice that shape things on a grand scale. The world's last completely wild flock of whooping cranes, about 275, returns in spring to a vast mosaic of marshes and shallow ponds. In summer, with 20 hours of daylight, you can almost hear the explosive growth of plants and insects. The insects become food for the dragonfly larvae that become food for the birds. When summer ends and the juveniles are able to fly, the cranes fly 2,700 miles to winter on the Gulf Coast of Texas. See videos and learn more at birdnote.org.
All right, you're tuned into a Juno Afternoon. It's just about 23 minutes to the top of the hour, and I'm Shelley Delaney, your host. My next guests are here from the Partnerships for Families and Children and the Association for the Education of Young Children and the Public Library. Welcome to the show, MJ and Nikki.
Hi there. Thanks.
Hi, it's great to be here with you. Thank you.
Sure. Would you just both introduce yourselves and tell me a little bit about which organization you're with and what's your role there?
Sure. My name is Nikki Love, and I am with AEYC, which stands for the Association for the Education of Young Children. And our work really focuses on the years of 0 to 8. AEYC houses the community coalition known as the Partnerships for Families and Children, which includes about 17 local nonprofit entities who have programs or services for families with kids, and that's like including the public library. Mm-hmm. But we also work with AWARE, with the Birth Center, with United Way, and we have a host of services, and we're really aiming on getting families connected with all those services and resources.
Great. And MJ, how about you?
I'm MJ Grandy, and I'm the Youth Services Librarian for Juno Public Libraries, and my responsibilities cover services and programs for people birth through 18. So I'm definitely part of the partnerships and bring in the literacy piece, and then as well as the facility piece on frequent occasions, because we have spectacular facilities for having large events,
hear, hear.
Which is what
yes.
this is going to be.
All right. So the library and AEYC and Partnerships for Family and Children and many other organizations are working together to sponsor the annual Early Learning Fair. So tell me a little bit about the fair. What is it?
Sure. This fair, it's happening next Tuesday, April 24th, from 4:30 to 6:30 at the Valley Library. And it's especially for children ages 3 to 5. It certainly has a focus on kindergarten readiness. There will be folks from the school district, including the Juno Community Charter School, the pre-K programs, and also the Montessori Borealis. So they'll be there talking about how to link up with whatever school your child will be entering into for kindergarten. But if your child isn't going into kindergarten this year, that's okay. It's still all about readiness. And again, we go back to those resources. Like, one of the pieces is really that literacy piece. So there's a lot of information about, like, reading with your child, different things that you can do around town. And there are also other agency partners that will be there. Like Juno Public Health will be offering free immunizations.
Wow.
For kids. Yeah.
Well, that's big.
Yep. And so bring your shot records. And also the Flying Lions will be doing free vision screenings for children. And our partner with Parents as Teachers program, she'll be doing free hearing checkups for children as well. So it's really a very rich opportunity to find out kind of, you know, what's happening and also getting your child checked out and see, make sure they're on track.
What kind of early learning options are there for preschoolers, those who aren't going into kindergarten yet?
Well, that's a great question. Our partners from Clinkit and Haida Head Start will be there, as will our partners with THRED. It's the Alaska State Resource and Referral Network, and they work with local child care providers and facilities and will actually have a search tool, kind of an online database, where if families are seeking care, we can enter in their information and find the different licensed programs that are around. So there'll be lots of opportunities to find more information about that. And let's see. And like I said, the pre-K programs with the school district.
Now, this is the 10th annual fair. Were either of you around for the first one?
Yes, I was.
Me too.
We're a little surprised that 10 years have rolled around so quickly.
Yeah. Anything special happening for the 10th anniversary of the Early Learning Fair?
It's always a party. It's always a pretty big party.
Always special. Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of engaged activities. There will be tubes to crawl through and things to sort. One of the really good things is you kind of go around and I don't know, is there going to be a checklist this year where you kind of check off stuff or kind of a random mobile? Or
It's more random. We found mm-hmm. that when we tried to give, we used to give a map out, like this is where everything is. People, they just rushed in and went wherever they wanted to. So mm-hmm. now it's more free form. Mm-hmm. But we have balloons marking different activity areas, and every child gets a door prize at the end.
Oh, cool.
And there are some mm-hmm. fantastic prizes this year.
Are you going to give me any hints?
I want to do the one that I'm hoping that for. I'm really excited about the families. They have their games now that where you pull cards. So it's like you do jumping jacks or toe touches and then how many of those. So it's like organizing experiential engagement. So it's a really moving through your body. forgive me. There are a lot of kids that are now being identified kind of with sensory input kinds of things or trying to figure out how to move more intentionally. And then the way that the brain systems are being wired through their movements and through their eye movements and through their physical movements, doing these in an intentional pattern can really help link the brain to really promote literacy later on. One of the other things I wanted to share just in the New York Times today, there was an article about reading to your children and how that not only promotes literacy, but their social and emotional development, that the how you can sit and just be is really another skill that is embedded in the brain and the body through that interpersonal reading experience. It's not just the letters on the page or just the words. It's the physicalness of being with somebody, hearing the tone, hearing the speech patterns, and just the being with a person that is so, so essential to the full development of our children.
Speaking of that, what is the importance of early learning for young children? I mean, how important are these resources for our community?
They're essential. They're essential. We get from birth to five to establish really healthy brain patterns, life patterns, emotional patterns. That is our best shot. From that point on, it's, I'm not thinking of the right word, it's not rehabilitation, but it's catch up. Mm-hmm. And so if we give our children what they need at the beginning, we are all better off from then on.
Is there a strong need for more of these resources in Juno? Do we need more or better resources or just better ways to connect families to resources?
That's an excellent question.
I think the resources are really strong, and that's part of what this coalition is about, is that we recognize these years are vital, and we're all doing work that addresses different issues. But this partnership formed, I think it was about 20 years ago, with the goal to not duplicate services. So if someone's offering something, to kind of keep it, spread it out so there's more for everyone. And I think it's an awareness piece that can really increase. And that's why we do these things in part, is to try to get it out to the community that you're not raising a child alone in a vacuum. I mean, it doesn't matter how much money you make, what background you come from. I mean, we can all use help with this. And with the increased knowledge around brain development and research, and we all know that the financial resources are decreasing in our state, it's great to know and find out what is available. How can we work together for better outcomes for everybody?
Well said. Anything to add, MJ?
I did, but it left now. Sorry.
Happens to me all the time. All right. So the Early Learning Fair, when and where is it taking place?
It will be at the Valley Public Library next Tuesday, April 24th, from 4:30 to 6:30 p.m. And if folks want to learn more about it or to learn more about the Partnerships for Families and Children, they can visit our website at junofamilies.org, or they can always call AEYC at 789-1235.
Fantastic. Thank you, Nikki Love and MJ Grande. Is there anything else you want to add about this event or anything else that you're working on?
It'll be so fun. It always is.
And pretty well-attended event every
year.
It
is, yeah. We get over 100 children every year. And it's so great to meet the families, and see what people are up to. Even if you don't think you need resources, just come and visit. It's really fantastic.
Right. That was my other thought, is that it's an old phrase, but it takes a village to raise a child. Mm-hmm. And that what we are seeing through the part, having the school district is also part of the Partnerships for Families and Children. And there, again, I cannot say so much how enough about the readiness of pre-K. The children coming into the schools, the teachers are finding the children need support. And so the earlier we can offer them. So if you've got grandkids, you've got whoever that's little in your life, come and find out more about what you can do to engage and really support them in their life skills, their
Absolutely.
Learning and their love.
Early Learning Fair, April 24th, 4:30 to 6:30 at the Mendenhall Library. Nikki and MJ, thanks so much for being with me today.
Thank you.
You too.
Bye-bye.
Are on the road must have a code that you can live by, and so become yourself, because the past is just a goodbye. Teach your children well, their father's hell did slowly go by, and feed them on your dreams, the one they picked, the one you know by. Don't you ever ask them why, if they told you you would cry, so just look at them and sigh. Of tender years, can't know the fears that your elders grew by, and so please help them with your youth. They see the truth before they can die. Teach your parents well, their
children's hell will slowly go by and feed them on your dreams. The one they picked, the one you know by. Don't you ever ask them why, if they told you you would cry. So just look at them and sigh, and know they love you.
The JEDC and partners are hosting the 9th Annual Juno Maritime Festival on Saturday, May 12th, downtown on the docks from 11 to 5. Vendor information and sign up on Facebook or visit JEDC.org. New this year are 12 fundraising cruises, 2 kids' cruises and hourly cocktail cruises featuring the Amalga and Port Chilcoot distilleries and Alaskan Brewing Company, hosted by Juno Tours. Port to Starboard Harbor cruises are from 11:30 to 1:30 and 3 to 5 during the festival. Tickets available online at JEDC.org.
Support comes from Heritage Coffee Roasting Company, offering coffee break service for the office. Heritage delivers fresh roasted coffees, brewing equipment, and beverage supplies to offices and businesses throughout Alaska. More information at heritagecoffee.com.
You're listening to A Juno Afternoon. I'm your host, Shelley Delaney, and my final guest today is a well-known figure in our community. Welcome back to the show, Maria Levischuk.
Thank you.
Maria, are you still the executive director of the Glory Hole?
I am.
Yes. Would you tell us what it is, what is the Glory Hole and what you do there, what services it provides?
So the Glory Hole is an emergency shelter, soup kitchen and care center in Juneau. And so we do 3 meals a day, breakfast, lunch and dinner. They have 40 emergency shelter beds. We also provide staffing for the Juneau Housing First Collaborative Project. And we staff the CBJ warming shelter on nights when it's below 32 degrees together with AWARE.
How strong is the need in Juneau for this type of resources or services that Glory Hole provides?
We are always full. We do about 55,000 or over meals per year, and we provide about 11,000 shelter nights in our shelter, but doesn't count the warming shelter. So I would say we need a significant.
The shelter is full most nights?
The shelter is full most nights, even with the warming shelter and Housing First.
Wow. The Glory Hole is described as the last safety barrier between hunger and cold and despair. It's open 24/7, 365. What does maintaining the shelter entail for you and your staff?
It's challenging, but it's a really rewarding place to work. It's really nice to be in a place where you're, you know, like engaging in a very meaningful way with people every day. But it is challenging. You know, resources are scarce. We do feed a lot of people, but the community really, I think, comes together to support the Glory Hole. Most of our dinners are prepared by volunteer groups. We have a lot of volunteers in and out all the time. People donate clothing, which is really great. So it's tough, but Juneau is a really good place to do it, I think.
What are some of the challenges that you've faced in recent years?
So resources, definitely funding is, you know, always an issue. And then during the last 2 years, we were helping to get the Juno Housing First Collaborative Project going. So that was challenging. And then, of course, just the need that the people face. You know, it's pretty grave. And so just trying to navigate people out of homelessness, sometimes it's tough.
You're here today to talk about the Empty Bowls fundraiser, your annual event. What is Empty Bowls?
So Empty Bowls is our really wonderful fundraiser. It is our only major fundraiser. It raised a really significant portion of our funds. And the local bowl makers create these beautiful creations. We have wood and ceramic ones. And we're laid out on tables. People come and they can pick their own bowl. I just saw the ones that Paul Walkers and Mary Pat Wyatt made, and they are amazing. Then most of the local restaurants make soup. So you get your bowl. You can choose soup. You can eat soup from 5 to 7, as much soup as you can eat. And then Breezin is making wonderful, wonderful rolls. They're super delicious. And then all of the local churches contribute cookies. And so it's just a really great place to kind of come hang out with your friends and neighbors and take home a really, really beautiful thing that you're going to have forever. And we have a silent auction and a dessert auction as well.
Lovely. What can you tell us about the bowls themselves? What are they like? Where do they come from?
They come from all over the place. So I mentioned, you know, the Walker's family. Also, the canvas has it contributes a tremendous amount of bowls. U.S. ceramics. We have wooden bowls from Nis Latnik and Dangachel and the Tangas woodturners. And then we just have, you know, people bring other bowls. So there are a lot of them, and they're all really different, which I think is the coolest part, because you can really pick whatever one you want.
And the bowls themselves, they are functional. You can eat your soup from the bowl you
unless
select.
You get a really pretty wooden one, which sometimes not so much. But yeah,
that's
we're
great.
Very functional. I mean, you know, I think sometimes you go into somebody's kitchen in Juneau and most of their bowls are from there.
Really? Mm-hmm. Well, that's a nice little souvenir. So you get to take, you choose your bowl and you get to take it home mm-hmm. afterwards. That's wonderful. So when and where is Empty Bowls taking place?
So it's at the Centennial Hall at 5 o'clock. It starts and it's on May 6th.
Wonderful.
And sometimes people come early to get the wooden ones, but we try to really spread them out. So I think that they are probably available, not just at 5.
And if we can't attend, are there other ways we can make a contribution to the Glory Hole?
Yes. If you can't attend and want to make a contribution, please do it through our website at www.feedjuno.org.
And is that the best place to go to find out more information about Empty Bowls, Glory Hole, all those,
yes.
anything else?
Mm-hmm.
Wonderful.
Or just stop by at 247 South Franklin Street.
Oh, yeah. We're all neighbors.
Yeah. We're in the middle of setting up our garden right now. So yeah,
wonderful.
Lots of activity.
Oh, that's great. Well, Maria Levishchuk, thank you so much for being here today and telling us all about Empty Bowls and giving us the background on the Glory Hole. Is there anything else you'd like to talk about today?
I know. I just really hope that folks show up, and thanks so much to everybody who is making this event possible.
Thanks so much for being here.
Thank you.
Thanks so much for tuning in today to a Juno Afternoon. On tomorrow's show, Julie Copen's host, she'll be joined by UAS's Emily Wall to highlight Friday's Tidal Echoes launch. Comedians from Club Baby Seal will preview their weekend shows. We'll hear about Gastineau Humane Society's run Fur Fun, and the Juno Arts and Humanities Council will preview the weekend's happenings with Arts Up. I'm your Wednesday host, Shelley Delaney. Today's show will be available on demand online at ktoo.org. Until tomorrow, this has been a Juno Afternoon. Have a great Juno evening.